Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's really about understanding how far you can push yourself when you don't have any other responsibilities.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we are excited to be talking to Veronica Morgan, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia, and owner of Good Deeds Property Buyers. Having struggled to find a career that truly satisfied her, she fell into the world of property. Fast forward a few decades, and she is now recognized as one of Sydney's expert property buyers. With a wealth of experience under her belt, Morgan is still looking at expanding her professional expertise.
I'm the principal of Good Deeds Property Buyers, which is a Sydney-based buyers agency. I also am co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia and Relocation, Relocation Australia with Bryce Holdaway on Foxtel. And this year I've actually launched my own podcast as well with a co-host, Chris Bates, and it's called the Elephant in the Room Property Podcast, where we talk about all the things that nobody wants to talk about regarding property.
With all these different professional roles, we asked Morgan what any given day in her life looks like.
Well, in a given day, because predominantly my business is being the principal of a buyer's agency in Sydney, now obviously what we do, we help people who want to buy property within a 10-kilometre radius of Sydney CBD, so that's Lower North Shore, Eastern Suburbs, Inner West, and we understand really how stressful the whole buying process is, particularly in such a and even in a flat market, it's still competitive and challenging, let me tell you. So we understand the stresses involved in that. We also understand how devastating it can be when you get it wrong and how easy it is to get it wrong. So my role is to develop products and systems and processes and research and get the message out to as many people as possible so that my team can help them buy the right property.
Morgan never felt a connection to a childhood suburb, ultimately enforcing a habit of being on the lookout for new places to sell into.
I grew up in, drum roll, I'm always a bit awkward about admitting this, I grew up in the Sutherland Shire in Sydney. And for anyone who knows the Shire, in inverted commas, they realise that most people who live there think it's God's country, and it is to them. I'm not disparaging it. It's just that only about 5% leave, and I'm one of the 5%. So I left there a long, long, long time ago. I actually turned 50 this year. I can't quite believe I'm that old, but anyway, I am, and I'm thankful that I've made it, you know, one piece. So I've been out of the Shire now for 30 years. Could not imagine going back, and I live in the inner city, the inner west of Sydney.
Wow. You're actually the first that tells me that, and to be honest, you know, to share that, because a lot of people don't like to say that about the Shire as well. So,
well, I will caveat it by saying I never felt like I belonged there. But a big reason why I would never belong there is because it's very much a beach culture and I have very white skin.
And then after you finished high school, did you go to university or did you go out and start any work?
I went to university. Well, actually, yeah, I didn't go to schoolies. I mean, I remember the day after I finished the HSC, I was back to my part-time job at Grace Brothers back at the day. I went straight to university and did a four-year degree in visual communications, believe it or not. And in the first year of that four-year degree, I realised I was going to be a really crap designer, and which is really what I was doing, was graphic design. And I went along to talk to the dean of the the department, and he, and just to get a bit of advice, and he said, well, do you like uni? I quite liked it. I just knew I was never going to be very good at what I was doing. And he said, well, since you haven't got any other plans, you might as well stick it out because when you finish it, you can go and do a post-grad, which is what I did. So I finished that degree. I went and worked in a design role for a short period of time, and within 2 years I was back at uni doing a Master's of Commerce in marketing. And I did marketing for some time. I also, when I was at university, I made sure I did accounting modules as well. And I remember learning negotiation in an accounting module, which is a bit odd now I come to think of it. But I did that because I, in the businesses that I worked for other people, I could see that marketers and finance people seem to be always at loggerheads. So I wanted to understand why. And in my very first lecture, I did understand why, and it was because of the word control. And accountants love using that word. And I was like, wow, that's why marketers and accountants really struggle to get on, because of this whole idea of control. And anyway, I learned a lot. It was great. I got that under my belt. And from there, I moved actually into recruitment, where I learned the art of selling. And cutting a long story short, after a couple of years in recruitment, I did really well, but I hated it, absolutely hated it. And I really wanted to get into hospitality. So that's where I went. I went and bought a cafe, blew all the money that I'd made in recruitment. And that's what led me to property, because after 2 years in hospitality, where I really felt that I, you know, my love of that industry was well and truly exhausted, I realised I had to go and earn some money. I was always interested in property. I liked the sales side of recruitment. I also looked at the sales process of, you know, finding a property, finding a buyer, putting them together, very similar to the recruitment process, finding a job and finding candidates and putting them together, except that I didn't have to get my buyer to like my vendor. That was really good. And, you know, very different in recruitment. And I did that for 6 years. And after 6 years, and I did very well in real estate sales, and I really enjoyed it for most of that time. But after the 6 years, I really got to the point where I needed a bigger challenge. And that is really how I ended up getting into the buying side of things.
Back then, being a buyer's agent wasn't a common profession. Morgan reveals how she ended up in a never-before-seen role.
Well, in 2006, I was starting to look at other ideas and projects, and I toyed with the idea of actually going to business with my bosses and opening up another agency with them. And I also at the same time was thinking I might try and have a baby, and I did. So my daughter is now 12. And at that point I thought, look, I'm just going to take a year off and really just reevaluate things. And I know an opportunity will come up. I don't know why I knew that, but I just felt that. And, you know, I really enjoyed that time off. And about the second 6 months of that, I started really starting to investigate other things that I could do, because I really by that stage realised I did not want to go back into sales. I'd really done what I wanted to do there. I had enough. And so I did start to look into the buyer's agent thing, but I was still dabbling in a number of different things. And outside of, at one point I thought I was going to go and sell cars. So, you know, I was looking at a wide variety of options there. And I actually was contacted by somebody that I'd done an appraisal for some years earlier. They'd moved to London and they wanted to buy back into Balmain, which is where I was selling, had been selling, and they wanted to buy back into Balmain. And they asked me if I'd represent them. And really that's where it started. I just thought, oh, well, yes, I can help you. And you know, they didn't even end up going for that property. But in the process I went through of thinking, okay, how can I represent them? I thought, this really interests me. And that's where it started.
Reflecting on the beginnings of her property investment journey, Morgan recalls whether her parents had any influence in her jump into real estate.
I couldn't even tell you where it came from. I think it really came from, for a while there, I lived in Manly. And I think, in fact, my cafe was in Manly. And while I was there, I just became interested in property generally. I think I had quite a few real estate agents as my client, as my customers in the cafe. Maybe that's where it started, you know, having conversations with them. I was looking through the Manly Daily all the time at the ads, you know, and I started looking at properties too. Bit hard when you have a cafe that you're at all day Saturday. But this interest was starting to peak at that point. And that's really, I guess, where it started.
With such a great amount of professional experience in the property investment industry, Morgan tells us the story of how she scored the role of co-host on Location, Location, Location Australia.
When I started off as a buyer's agent, so my business actually started, I contracted for someone else for a while, and then I actually started my own business in the beginning of 2009. And I really started researching overseas buyer's agents because there just was not a lot here, some here, but and obviously I was watching the show, you know, Relocation, Relocation and Location, 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 the English version with Kirstie and Phil. And, you know, and in a way that was a bit of training, you know, just watching that. And I remember researching and just looking into their website, just seeing what resources they had, for instance, and there was something there about Phil coming out to film in Australia, and I was really incensed. I thought, oh, you're kidding me. You can't find an Australian, you know, presenter. This is ridiculous. And I didn't go hunting any of this. I'll honestly tell you, this came to me. But the idea was like, oh, if ever there's going to be a show in Australia, I want to be the host. So that sort of just was it. Lay dormant. I did nothing about it. I can't claim to have made this happen one little bit. And I was actually on holidays in Thailand, and I got contacted by the producers of the Australian version of the show. And they were just basically contacting, I think, every single buyer's agent they could find online. And you know, there was nothing special in terms of how they found me. And I just had this sort of, had this sense of entitlement. I don't know, a bit cheeky, I guess, but I really felt like it was mine. I just didn't want anyone else to get it. I really wanted it. And I just felt it was mine. This is me. I can do this. So it's a bit odd because I'm not always that confident, believe it or not, in life. And not that certain always, but I was about that, and I managed to somehow get chosen. So there you go. That's the end of that story.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into Morgan's journey as a full-time property investor.
I have made mistakes, even though I'm a professional. And in fact, a lot of the mistakes that I prevent my clients from making are
her worst investing moment on her property journey thus far.
I was under the impression, shall we say, that I could buy without having to sell. Then I realised I had to sell, and then all of a sudden I was under absolute pressure to get that sold.
The point at which everything clicked for her?
I still sort of turn around and, you know, pinch myself because it was just, that was one example of where all the ducks lined up.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum and you're listening to Property Invest Story. Hey podcast listeners, are you interested in small investments with big profits? If the answer is yes, then register your interest at propertyinveststory.com. When you sign up, you'll receive deals at wholesale price, which I've negotiated with the vendor. These deals generate positive cash returns from day one, and I only send these out exclusively to my community. To find out more, visit propertyinveststory.com. Now back to the show. Morgan's first investment happened in her mid-20s, where she was unsure of what she was getting herself involved in.
I have made mistakes, even though I'm a professional. And in fact, a lot of the mistakes that I prevent my clients from making are, you know, rooted in my learning from my own mistakes. My first ever property I bought when I was 26 or 27, I'm trying to remember now, it was at the suggestion of a boyfriend, believe it or not. And it was while I was in recruitment. And I think I was 27. And, yeah, it was while I was in recruitment. So I was earning good money. And he suggested, I've got a friend who's got this development in Chippendale or wherever it was. And, you know, you can buy a one-bedroom property for X amount of dollars. You should do that. And so I went off to look at this brand new development and the apartments that I could afford or I thought I could afford. And I was mortified because they were horrible. And to this day, I'm very glad I didn't buy one. But what it did do, it got me started. I went, right, that's it, I'm out. And so I started looking and I actually did buy a brand new property, as it turns out. And I think it was back in the days, it was in the late 90s or mid 90s, and where you could actually buy at a reduced price, not like today. And I think I did all right. You know, I actually lucked it. I actually bought a studio. It was a very well designed studio. Back in the day, I could borrow 95% of it. I think stamp duty was like $3,000. You know, it was a great foothold. I actually lived in it for a year, and then I kept it as an investment for a number of years and ended up selling that in order to buy my first house. And so the capital growth of that property gave me the deposit on a house, and I couldn't have saved it as fast as it made it in terms of property growth. There was a hell of a lot of luck in that. Some of the mistakes were that really I didn't push myself. I was very safe in terms of what I bought. I could have afforded more. I didn't have anyone to guide me really, other than the boyfriend suggesting that I buy something. That was it. So I didn't know where to go to get advice. I didn't know you could get advice. Maybe I couldn't back then. I don't know. But my parents went, I helped, because they've never invested. I mean, they've owned their own home, but that's it. So I didn't have the network around me or the support structure to make the best decision I could have made. But I made an okay decision.
Morgan recalls a high-pressure experience of one of her worst property investing moments.
When I sold that property, I bought a house with my then husband, and we used, obviously, the fact that I had that property with the equity I had in that property as the effectively the deposit. But because it was less than 50 square metres, in fact, it was less than 40 square metres, it was 36 square metres, the bank had changed all their rules, and they would, even though it was actually positive cash flow, that property as well. And it was really frustrating to me that the bank forced me to sell it because it was under their threshold in terms of size. And that was really infuriating. And it actually put me under quite a lot of pressure because, once again, I didn't have good advice, didn't have good access to good advice. So I bought, mortgage broker told me that I could, or the bank told me that I could, well, hang on, let me just go back here. I'm trying to remember exactly the chronology here, some years ago. I was under the impression, shall we say, that I could buy without having to sell. Then I realised I had to sell, and then all of a sudden I was under absolute pressure to get that sold prior to me settling on the house. So that was scary because I really felt I really felt quite exposed at that point in time, and I was pretty panicked. Anyway, managed to get it sold and got it sold for a fair price, and you know, the rest is history. So that was a sticky, and that was back to not getting good advice and not knowing what I didn't know, so therefore I didn't ask the right questions.
I mean, from that experience, I would say you've probably definitely mentioned many times getting good advice and getting the right guidance really makes a difference. If there was that kind of thing, how would you have looked at it differently to go into buying property back then? I know this is all hindsight stuff, but it'll be interesting to know.
Well, in hindsight, okay, so before buying that first property, first of all, I would have gone to a broker and understood my full borrowing capacity first, because what I did, I just looked for pretty much cheap property because I didn't like the idea of carrying debt. So I easily serviced that property, that loan, and I could have borrowed more and serviced more. So that is the first thing that I did wrong, because of course when you're young and you've got good earning capacity and don't have any responsibilities such as children or the rest of it, that's your peak accumulation phase. Now I know it's got a name. You know, I didn't know that back then. And so I missed an opportunity. So it was an opportunity cost, I guess, of buying a too smaller asset. And as it turns out too, in hindsight, back then I didn't know that 50 square metres was going to become a magic number, you know, and that was going to change things. So that's the sort of the future of it. But so that's the first thing. It's really about understanding how far you can push yourself when you don't have any other responsibilities. And I think that's pretty important. I will say, though, it was in an excellent location, and that is really what did the heavy lifting with it. So I made a mistake on the actual asset, but the location meant it sort of covered off that mistake. Now, you can do so much better if you have a location and you make sure you get an excellent asset. You can absolutely supercharge capital growth. So that was a mistake there, and that's something I know through learning through that. Obviously, I pass that knowledge on to my clients. And then, of course, exchanging contracts on a house, thinking that you know, I had sort of this luxury of time as to when and where I chose to sell the apartment. That was a massive risk I took, and I didn't even realize I was taking it. So, and that's another thing, you know, if you have to sell before you buy, you need to absolutely know that before you actually commit to a new purchase.
In contrast to this experience, Morgan shares one of her countless success stories with property investment.
I bought a property, an investment property, actually in Alexandria, a house, back in October 2012. That, you know, that's a sort of timing, if you like, that I can dine out on, because I got that in just before the Sydney boom, which meant that I got all of the growth in that particular property. But not only that, I actually... It was one of the properties that as soon as I saw it online, I just went, oh, that's a great property. And to give you an example, I was actually looking for a client at the time, and there was another house which was exactly 50 houses up that street, and I liked the look of that for a client, and the client was overseas and they weren't quite ready to make a commitment without seeing the property. And I'd started some preliminary research in the price and looking into the sales history of, around the area and all the rest of it. And I came up with this other one, the one I ultimately bought, which had failed to sell a year earlier. And it came up in the recent sales, which is a bit of an odd thing in some of these databases. But I looked at that and went, oh, I like that. And what I loved about it was that it had blue shag pole carpet and blue stripy wallpaper, but I could see just from the photos, I knew the location was excellent. I could see from the photos online that this was a really well-maintained property. And look, I can pick this stuff up, right? So when I went and looked at the property, it stacked up with everything that I thought, and I would never recommend anybody choose a property based on what they see online either. There's a caveat there. But we have this bit of a joke called a nana's property. And a nana's property is basically something that's really dated but in immaculate condition. And that is exactly what this property was, immaculate condition but dated. And so blue shag pile carpet, blue stripy wallpaper just turned people off. But I could see underneath that a lot of the original features were still there. You know, it was, as I said, it was a very well-maintained, very well-loved home. And I managed to pick it up because, funnily enough, it happened to be about to be placed back on the market. And I picked it up at the same price that their best offer had been a year earlier. And I still sort of turn around and, you know, pinch myself, because it was just, that was one example of where all the ducks lined up, all my knowledge as to what to look for, what constitutes a good property, how I found it, was it a little bit left of center? The timing was absolutely perfect. You know, they'd missed out on opportunity. The owner's expectation was a little bit too high a year earlier. And as a consequence, I got to buy it a whole year later. It's a bit less than I would have had to pay had it hit the market fresh.
So, inspired by Veronica Morgan's story, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode where we'll discuss significant mentors that have helped her on a property investment journey.
John Lindemann, for instance. You know, he's been around a long time, and I find his approach just a little bit different. So I would say he's a mentor.
Details on her property investment habits.
Well, I drive everyone nuts, right, because I have this approach to life. It's continual improvement.
What she is excited about for the future?
I'm changing my debt structure a bit, and I'm actually about to renovate another property, which is my home. Again.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, are you interested in small investments with big profits? If the answer is yes, simply text me your email address to 04998810 40 to register your interest. When you sign up, you'll receive deals at wholesale price, which I've negotiated with the vendor. These deals generate positive cash returns from day one, and I only send these out exclusively to my community. To find out more, text me your email address on 04998810 40. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.